And therefore, we thought it very fitting to have a man who has been involved in this kind of ministry all of his life and who now works in Texas as the director of missions to share with us that particular area of Hispanic ministry and also in general. Pastor Bowden is a graduate of Bronxville and of this worthy institution, and it ought to encourage you to see that he has lasted 19 whole years in the ministry thus far. When I run around the country, I run into alumni every once in a while, and my common greeting is to look them in the eye and say, "Are you still in the ministry?" I had one fellow in Southern California who took me seriously, and I almost got my head knocked off. So you learn to control your humor. Fred graduated from here in 61, and then did both of his vicarage and his first call were in Venezuela, and then has served as a pastor in Corpus Christi, Texas, and then as a result of his excellent work, was moved into the office of Director of Missions in the Texas District. So at this time, we'll let him address you, and there will be time later on for discussion and questions. So Fred, will you take over the mic?
Buenos dias. Oh, at least a few of you know it. Anyway, I thought it was kind of hopeless. I don't know if you're supposed to confess to anxiety when being asked to address a seminary group with faculty. I always sort of stood in awe of faculty in my days at the seminary, and I still do. I have to confess to that kind of anxiety for the last couple of weeks, and especially the last couple of nights. That's why the bags are under my eyes. But I am glad to say that having especially met some of the Texas students here, I feel more at home. That really calmed me down. So I'm glad you guys are here to kind of stand behind me. I'd like to sort of start off by giving you some background as to where I came from. You heard some of it from Professor Schultz. But to give you some indication as to how I got to the point where I am at and my concerns is especially toward Hispanic ministry. I am from New York, born and brought up in on Long Island, New York, and Texas. I always have to say, don't hold that against me, but I think I'm among a number of Northerners here also. I am very much of a nationalized Texan, however, at this point, I have to admit to that. I did go to Concordia College in Bronxville. The way I kind of came into the ministry, I really can't explain what situations all kind of fell together to bring it about. My dream was sort of to be sort of an Andre Castellanos. I majored in music in high school, and that's what I was going for. And the last part of my senior year in high school, after a Walter League meeting, my pastor came up to me and simply asked, "Fred, have you ever thought of going to the ministry?" And I don't know if I laughed at him or not, but I do know that I said something to the effect that that was the furthest thing from my mind. However, the next 2 weeks passed with, I can't recall those 2 weeks. I can't find anyone, including my parents, who seem to remember all the things that transpired during those 2 weeks, but I do know that 2 weeks later I told my dad that I wanted to enroll at Concordia Bronxville for the ministry, which I did do, and started through Bronxville. I was in the old three-year program. There were 12 of us that came from public school settings, known as the 12 Disciples that particular year, and then came here to Concordia Seminary, and always during that time I had an interest in foreign mission work. My first year at at Concordia, I have to admit, I sort of had the idea, I'm going to give this thing a try, but I'm just not really totally convinced. But the Lord saw to it that I had a roommate who was very dedicated to the cause of missions, and a very fine, strong Christian individual. His name also was Fred, and his little Fred, and I was big Fred all during those years. You know how short he was. But after the first year, I feel the Lord used him to kind of convince me that the ministry is where he wanted me. We were both intensely interested in going to Nigeria. And there was a plan at that time here at the seminary known as the 110 plan. I mean, perhaps some of the profs here recall that. Maybe they were students at the time. The 110 plan was a plan whereby students, and I believe initially it was 110 students, that's the only part of that history I'm not certain about, would set aside, I guess you call them their mites, like the LWML does, daily. We had dorm captains, and they would go once a week to gather in the offerings from the various dorms. At the end of the year, we presented a check to the Synodical Mission Board for the support of those vicars who that current year were in foreign situations. And in many cases, they were in Nigeria. And also at that time, there was one, I recall, in Hawaii. And Hawaii was a foreign mission at the time. I was chairman of that the year before my vicarage, and very hopeful that I'd be on the other end of the stick, I guess, the following year. That particular year, there were no vicarage assignments to Nigeria. Little Fred was sent to the Panama Canal Zone. Another brother in the ministry was sent to Guatemala. And the other call was to Venezuela, Caracas, Venezuela, the capital of the country, and that's where I was assigned. And so from Nigeria, and thinking about black ministries, the Lord had other ideas, and I got involved in Spanish-speaking ministries. Very much wanted to return to the foreign mission field and to Venezuela if possible. The Lord saw to that, and in 1961, I did receive my first assignment to the eastern part of the country. During my years there, which were a total of 7.5 years with my vicarage, I served 8 different congregations or mission stations in 3 different states. There are 20 states in the country of Venezuela. As I mentioned this morning in chapel service, at that time the population was about 8 million in Venezuela. And we were dealing mostly with the campesino folk, the country folk, the poorest of the poor. We were going back to a 17th century type setting in terms of what was available in terms of utilities and things like that, or water from the river and so forth. I won't go into all those things. But that was the introduction, really, to experience with working in the Spanish language. I do believe that the Lord has given me the gift of missionary and the ability to minister cross-culturally. I wanted to utilize that and grow in that over the years of learning Spanish, and I am by no means an expert in the Spanish language. I was able to develop it to the extent that I was effective in the kind of ministry that I was performing. Following those years in Venezuela, I was called then to Nuestro Salvador congregation in Corpus Christi, Texas, which is a 99.44% Mexican-American congregation. My wife and I, my 3 daughters born in South America, and 2 other Anglos who were married to Mexican-Americans were the only gringos, as we call them, in that congregation. I served the congregation for a total of almost 12 years. I laughingly talk a little bit about a little sabbatical that I had. I took a call to San Antonio for 10 months. They wanted to do Spanish work when they called me, and then they changed their mind after I got there. Since my own congregation was not able to get a pastor, they called me back, and I spent until May of 1979 as pastor there. In 1976, I was also elected as a member of the Texas District Mission Board and was able to offer some input, in particular in terms of Hispanic ministries in the Texas District. In 1978, then I was elected one of the vice presidents of the Texas District. That was rather short-lived because they gave me the contract for my present position. And I must say that one of the main reasons I accepted this particular call, because I'm totally dedicated in my ministry to Hispanic ministry. I again say that the Lord has given me that gift. I don't want to simply push it aside. I want to utilize it the best I can. But I do feel that through this position, perhaps the Lord can use me to bear greater influence in terms of the needs and challenges of Hispanic ministry, both within the Texas District as well as across our synod. Our synod, I recall speaking at the convention in Dallas a number of years ago. I had the opportunity before the Hispanic resolutions were presented. And one of the things I said at that time, I think, typifies my feeling about Hispanic work in our synod. You perhaps recall the stereotype of a Mexican. And one of the typical stereotypes is that of the man sitting in the noonday sun, all kind of hunched over with a big sombrero over his head, and the sombrero is covered down, he's taking his siesta. And very often we had stereotyped the Mexican as being a very lazy individual, just wanted to sit around sleeping all day. And I sort of transposed that stereotype of the Mexican-American and said that I felt that this was very much a picture of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in terms of its outreach to Hispanics. I'm just convinced that we're beginning to only lift the sombrero slightly. There's an awful lot more that needs to be done. I'm hopeful that perhaps by some of the experiences that I've had and the influence that I can share with others in the church, that sombrero will be completely lifted and that we will be very, very much involved and dedicated to the cause of Hispanic ministries in our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And that's in reference specifically to Hispanic ministries here in the United States. Let me check my notes here and let you know that at this time, the Texas District is very much concerned about work among the Hispanics as a top priority, along with the priority of gathering in those individuals from the North who prefer to come to paradise, that is Texas. Not just the snowbirds who stay for half a year, but those who are migrating permanently to our area of the world. Dr. Westcott had shared with us, and perhaps most of you have heard him say this, that 40% of all the people that are moving in the United States today are moving to Southern California, Florida, and Texas. Now, that's a fantastic percentage of people. Pastor O'Shaughnessy, our district president, who also shares his greetings with you on this occasion, has indicated on a number of occasions that the U-Haul company charges an additional rate to individuals who move to Texas in order to get the U-Hauls back, simply because, and this is Pastor Shoney's feeling, I don't know how legitimate it is, because it's the feeling that if everybody who moved to Texas moved in a U-Haul, there would be no U-Hauls anywhere else except Texas. But we are experiencing 70,000 new inhabitants in Texas each year. 70,000 people, that's a phenomenal rate of growth in that state. Houston alone is receiving approximately 40,000 of those people each year. So obviously we have a tremendous ministry there. In addition to that, then, the gathering together of not only Lutherans who are migrating, but also the outreach, evangelistic outreach to those who know not the Lord Jesus, our other priority, equal priority, is in Hispanic ministries. Now perhaps we ought to ask ourselves, what is the Hispanic? Exactly what would you define the Hispanic as? And this has changed over the course of the years. The U.S. government has changed its way of defining these people many times in the past 125 years. Back in 1850, Hispanics were Spanish-speaking immigrants. In 1910, they were persons speaking Spanish as a mother tongue. By 1930, they were identified as persons being of the Mexican race. In 1950, they were persons with Spanish surnames in the southwestern states of our country. By 1970, only 10 years ago, the term Hispanic meant persons of Spanish origin or descent. Now, the Federal Interagency Committee on Education defines the Hispanic as a person of Mexican, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Central or South American, or other Spanish culture or origin, regardless of race. These then are the people that we are dealing with in our concerns this morning. I mentioned the figure 25 million Hispanics. It depends on what sources you go to. Many sources speak about 12 million, plus those who are undocumented. And you can come up with any average figure as far as the undocumented are concerned, depending on where you are and what kind of studies you make. In 1960, however, only 20 years ago, there were only 3.1 million registered Hispanics in our country. Today, we are awaiting the 1980 census figures, which I predict, personally, will reveal in excess of 25 million, including undocumented persons. There are many sources that quote 12 to 15 million Hispanic American citizens, with an additional 8 million minimum of refugees or undocumented persons. The Massachusetts Institute of Technology, in a study made in 1975, a well-documented survey, indicated that there were 680,000 Mexican Americans entering the United States that year. That's 1,863 per day. Most of these are undocumented, formerly known in Texas area as wetbacks, then also known as illegal alien. That term is not the best term to use nowadays. No one likes to be illegal. And the Mexican-American, the Mexicans coming across dislike being referred to as illegal. Also, aliens nowadays seems to have to do more with people who come from outer space. So they kind of, you know, get away from that also. But the proper term, the in vogue term today, is the undocumented person. In some cases, the undocumented worker. 75% of all Hispanics in the United States live in five states. And in order of the greatest population, they are California, Texas, New York, Florida, and New Mexico. 60% of the Hispanics are Mexican American. 15% are Puerto Rican American. 7.5% are Central and South American, and approximately 6%, and I guess we can move that upward nowadays. 6% or 7% are Cuban American. The median age of the Hispanics in our country is 22.1 years. That indicates a very young constituency of people that we need to be ministering to. That's in comparison to the median age of 30.6 for Anglo. Obviously, Spanish is the language that is mostly used. In fact, 80% of Hispanic households, in a study that was made in 1978, still use Spanish as their common home language. 80%. Most of these individuals today are bilingual and can handle English as well as Spanish. A few, especially the recent generations coming into the country, can still only handle the Spanish language. I also indicated in the service this morning that the United States is the fifth largest Spanish-speaking country in the world, and that is after Mexico, Spain, Argentina, and Colombia, in that order. So obviously, you can see that there is a tremendous and perhaps one of the greatest opportunities for ministry for our church and for all Christian churches, for that matter, in this century. Will be among what I right now consider to be the largest minority group in the United States. All kinds of figures came into us at one time. They said 1980 would be the year when the Hispanics outnumber the blacks as the largest minority. Others say 1985. And obviously with figures coming in today of the undocumented persons coming in, plus those who are coming in from Cuba at a very large rate, I think we can very safely say that the percentage is, the group is already a minority. Let's say a little bit about Hispanics in Texas in particular. Hispanics in Texas, what is the number? Here again, the number varies on depending on who you read. We have been told that during the 1980s, 50% of the population of the third most populous state in the Union, which conservatively numbers 15 million souls, will be Spanish surnamed. 50%. The Los Angeles area, in comparison, let me say that indicates about 7 million people. 7 million people. What a tremendous mission field. That's almost the size of Venezuela in the years that I served there. The whole country. And they're just in Texas. Most people often told me, well, that's South Texas. But you get to North Texas and it's going to be different. Now, as mission director in charge of about 84 different mission ministries in Texas, I travel all around the state constantly. I was just in North Texas this past Sunday, and I go driving along, and every time I see a church, because my eye kind of automatically goes over and takes a quick glance, and I'm seeing more and more, even in North Texas, of churches which say in front, Iglesia Presbyteriana, Iglesia Bautista, Iglesia Metodista, and so forth. The constituency of Hispanics and Mexican Americans in particular, even in the northern climes of Texas, is significant enough for other denominations to actually form congregations to serve them. Certainly there's got to be a lesson in there for us as Lutherans as well. Our Hispanic work in Texas goes back 55 years. Today there are only 14 ministries, and 7 of those are now vacant. The ministries are located mostly in small towns and in the large cities. there are some which reach out to the rural areas. In a study which we made just early this year in canvassing all of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregations, all 315 of them in Texas districts, we discovered that there were, and this is on a 97% feedback to us, only 2,000 Hispanic Lutherans that our churches could identify. Our 14 ministries, I'm going to read them for the sake of those who may be interested, are located in Austin congregation, which is an indigenous Hispanic congregation, and by that I mean that this is a totally Hispanic self-governing body. Brownsville El Calvario, also an indigenous congregation. Corpus Christi Nuestro Salvador, congregation which I served, which is now vacant for 18 months, is also an indigenous Hispanic congregation. Last month I was in Dallas and I dedicated our first Hispanic congregation mission in Dallas, and that's La Misión Luterana Emmanuel, served by a lay pastor, Roberto Hernandez. In Del Rio, Texas, we have an Anglo congregation which is also reaching out to the Hispanic community, and they have special Spanish services in a sort of a separate congregation. Harlingen, our Redeemer congregation, is also an indigenous ministry. At St. Paul, the Mother Church in San Antonio, we have a Hispanic ministry served by Carlos Berger, and this is separate from the Anglo ministry, and also has a very extensive social ministry outreach. San Pedro congregation in Houston is by and large also an entirely Hispanic congregation. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in McAllen is the largest Hispanic congregation of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. In Mercedes, Texas, we have a Hispanic lay worker. Rubén Valdez is working there. Formerly Carlos Segovia, who's right now a student at the Colloquy Center in Chicago. In Raymondville, Texas, we have one of your students who is on his second year of vicarage, Steve Morfitt, who, by the way, is doing a really excellent job and has a fantastic grasp of the Spanish language. We sent him to Mexico this summer, and he's even better than he was before he went. He's serving in Raymondville during his vicarage. In Houston, we have at St. Paul congregation a separate Hispanic ministry. Here is a declining congregation in a declining neighborhood, almost totally Mexican-American. A few of the old folks are still holding on, but they have not, as a congregation, opened themselves to minister to their community. We as a mission board had to come in and sort of force the issue. At the present time, I'm told that Mike Graham, who I believe went to Fort Wayne, if I'm not mistaken, Gary, is that right? Is a pastor there, and he has, in a year and a half time, almost 2 years' time, developed a following of Hispanic Mexican-Americans that in many Sundays outnumbers the number of Anglos still worshiping in that congregation. Also, San Antonio Trinidad congregation is the oldest of the Hispanic congregations, formal congregations in the United States. It is celebrating, I think, this year its 55th year. These are then the ministries that we have in a Texas district that as we reach out to the Hispanics. I've heard people say, oh, Texas district has the largest Hispanic program, has had the largest Hispanic program in our synod. And that makes me shiver because it's extremely insignificant, the number of people that we actually are reaching. We have many, many more opportunities. Manpower is one of our biggest problems. The Texas district, just to show you some commitment on the part of our district, the Texas district in 1979 alone committed $175,000 in subsidy monies for Hispanic work, just for Hispanic work, not including other ethnic ministries. We have a need to provide Spanish ministries to various types of Hispanics. When you say, I'm going to talk about Mexican-American mostly. We talk about Mexican-American, what comes to your mind? Again, our stereotypes are misleading. You can't give a definition of what is a typical Mexican-American any more than you can of a Puerto Rican-American or a Cuban-American. Perhaps the Mexican-American lineup is a bit more crass because you have a people here who have a great proximity for some time to our country. You have three types of Mexican-Americans. You have a Mexican-American who wants to be totally Hispanic, totally Mexican. Excuse my voice, it's starting to crack now because it's cold weather. You didn't plan the right weather for me here. Us Texans can't take this. But the Mexican-American who wants to be thoroughly Mexican. And what he will do is attempt the best he can to preserve his Mexicanness, his language, his culture, his traditions, and so forth. Spanish will be spoken almost entirely. Then you have, on the other side, the Mexican-American who wants to be totally anglicized. This is the individual who, in many cases, will change his name from Martinez to Martin. He wants to fit in with the Anglo culture for various number of reasons. In some cases, because of the oppression upon the Mexican-American, and I'm speaking again of Texas, I had members of my congregation who told me that they remember going to school, and they were castigated in many cases. They were disciplined and whipped at times if they spoke Spanish on the school campus. You were not to do that. They did not want their children to go through the same difficulties they went through, and so they sort of swung the pendulum across the other way, and they want to become totally anglicized, and they want to fit into that kind of a lifestyle. And then you have the Mexican-American who wants the best of both worlds. In Venezuela, the term we use there, and I guess it would apply to Mexican-American as well, was café con leche. Café con leche means coffee with cream. Now, before I got into this position as mission director, I had no relationship with any black ministries at all. None whatsoever. And I had to make my first visit at one of our black congregations in South Texas, and I told them, I don't know anything about what is necessary for this kind of ministry. Teach me. Tell me what I'm supposed to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing. And in part of the discussion, we were talking about, should we call a black pastor or a white pastor for this congregation? And, of course, the feelings differed. And I said, now, I don't know what's really acceptable or wanted among the blacks, but I will say this is how it is among the Mexican-Americans. And I mentioned this breakdown, and I used the term café con leche and explained it to them, and they all laughed and said, oh, yeah, that's the Oreo cookie. And they said, this is actually the term that is used among blacks in order to identify the individual who wants to maintain externally his blackness and yet at the same time wants to also take upon himself some of the Caucasian, the Anglo-Caucasian background and characteristics. So these are three types of individuals. When we talk about ministry to Hispanics, we've got to divide that. We are not saying that every Hispanic, because he's Hispanic, every Mexican-American, because he's Mexican-American, must thereby attend a Mexican-American congregation. They have got to choose which they want, which communicates best to them and satisfies their needs, their spiritual needs. But we must be aware of the fact that there are a great number who can best be reached through the Spanish culture, through the Mexican culture, through the Spanish language. And that's one of the reasons for providing what I refer to as the indigenous Hispanic congregation. Or opposed to that is the congregation which is predominantly Anglo, changing neighborhood, and also needs to be reaching out to the people in the neighborhood. Now, I'm not going to go into that very much. That's still a great problem for our church. I don't have many answers for that. We're struggling to find how best to be able to serve in those particular situations. Might also mention that our synod, only about 4 or 5 years ago, finally recognized the Hispanic ministry to the point of providing for the opportunity for all Hispanics to gather together in national Hispanic Lutheran conferences. First one held in Chicago, and last year in Los Angeles. We're happy to say that the Texas District will be hosting the third National Hispanic Lutheran Conference in the spring of 1981 in McAllen, Texas. And we hope to be able to set some new directions for Hispanic ministries, not only for Texas, but for other places as well. An interesting fact is that most of our Mexican-American ministries in Texas grew out of parochial school situations. The majority of the ministries that are long-term ministries originally started with a parochial school. The congregation I served at Corpus, the same thing, to be able to reach out with a very specific need. There is a new book, a study come out of Washington, I've lost the paper that has the name of it, on education among Hispanic Americans. Extremely low, the percentage of those that even get to high school, even today. Something like only 41% of the Hispanics have an opportunity to even get into high school, even get into high school. The need for education geared specifically for the Mexican-American, and I'm sure the other Hispanic-Americans, I think has been a big strength in the past of our Hispanic work. Unfortunately, only one of those schools exists today. It becomes extremely costly to maintain them, number one. And number two, because of relocation of congregations in the past, the neighborhood, the predominant Mexican-American neighborhood, has been abandoned. What is our Texas District commitment to Hispanic ministry? As I said before, it is a priority in special ministry outreach in our district. I have let it be known that I feel completely unmoved at this point to even consider beginning a new mission in the Texas District south of San Antonio unless it be directed to the Hispanic population. We've been working on a new ministry in Corpus Christi, which is predominantly Anglo. But from this point on, I see no need. When you're dealing in towns and communities that are 80, 75, 80, 85, and along the border, 90 to 95% Hispanic American, Mexican American, it's just plain poor stewardship of the Lord's treasury, of our people's money and contributions, to be establishing ministries that are going to reach out to 10, 15, or 20% of a population. It is our goal to fill the present ministries that are vacant and to begin new work. I feel my hands extremely tied in beginning new Hispanic missions, although the opportunities are glaring us in the face, simply because manpower is not available for those ministries which presently exist. I was sharing with my compadre, Roy Garcia, the fact that I've gotten to the point of disliking going back to my former congregation where I've been preaching once a month because it's the only Spanish worship that they had, because I've had such terrific guilt feelings about having left them. They can't get a man to serve them. I hope that's going to be resolved in the very near future. But manpower is certainly the biggest problem. We are providing, in the process right now, of developing a cassette tape program to teach an elementary course in Spanish geared specifically for use within an ecclesiastical or theological setting. These cassette tapes produced by our district will be sent free of charge to every full-time worker in the Texas district. We have heard many of them say, I wish I could speak Spanish. I wish I could communicate. The people are here. If only I had the opportunity to do so. These are pastors, teachers, DCEs, deaconesses, and so forth, all saying the same thing. We tried at one time to gather them all together for intensive course in the summer. Then came the vacation Bible schools and the vacation times and this seminar and that seminar and one going to the seminary for continued education. As a result, maybe a handful attended. So we're going to take the course to them. We'll provide it to them on 24 lessons, and hopefully they'll be able to pick it up to the point where they can be teased enough to want to go to a community college or to other institutions which offer more advanced courses in Spanish. But at least offer that to all of our workers so they can prepare themselves for that kind of outreach. Approximately one-fourth to one-third of all of our mission dollars in the Texas District are dedicated to ethnic work, and will be continued. We will continue to dedicate at least that amount to ethnic work. In the Texas District in 1981, we are seeking $1 million just for the work of our missions, our Texas missions. So that is one-fourth or one-third of that, obviously, is going to be a good, tidy sum that we are committed to for this outreach. Institutions which are now available, Concordia College Lay Training Program and Mexican American Studies. On resolution of our Synod and Convention, Concordia College Austin was asked to begin a Hispanic lay training program. That was a number of years ago. We've kind of stumbled and fallen a number of times, tried to get this thing underway. Dr. Grocock from the college served as an interim coordinator of the program, contacted a number of individuals. These are not all Texans. We have some students from Ohio and from Florida who are also in the program. They will be taking the course by correspondence with their local pastor, bilingual pastor, serving as sort of an adjunct professor for the administration of the courses. At the present time, I just got a letter from our new coordinator who's just come from Mexico City, Professor Leonard Stalky, who was on the job now. A letter which he gave me just 3 days ago when I was at Concordia, indicating that he now is ready to really get out, meet new people, recruit, and administer some courses. Four courses presently are being administered in the Spanish language to people in the various states and predominantly in Texas. Also, Concordia College is now, as you perhaps know, becoming a four-year institution. One of the four majors which they are offering is a major in Mexican-American Studies. And as a result of that, we will also be able to provide not only for those wanting to enter specifically into Hispanic ministries, but for all of our lay workers going through our Texas school, an exposure and a sensitivity to the outreach to the Mexican-American. The in-service training program for vicars had its birth in 1972 in the Texas District in San Antonio. This is a program whereby we requested vicars, teacher interns, deaconess interns to be assigned to the Texas District for a period of 1 or 2 years. They came out of the into their internship into an intensive course in the Spanish language and also acculturation to the Mexican-American community. Over the course of these 8 years, we have had approximately 25 interns in the Texas District. We have 4 this year who are involved in this kind of an experience. After they have completed their intensive training with Dr. Grocock in Austin during the summer, they are assigned to a Hispanic congregation. Now, no Hispanic congregation really is large enough to merit a vicar as such. Some of them are only 55 and 60 total members. But for the exposure, for the experience, for living within the setting, living within the culture, we have found it to be most valuable. And one thing that I really am very pleased, and if I can even use the word proud about this program, which is not only in the Texas District now, by the way, but also exists in the Northern Illinois and the Florida District in particular, there may be some new ones added in the future, is the fact that of those that had that experience, of those vicars in particular who went into that kind of a setting, a tremendously high percentage returned into Hispanic ministry. It's also interesting to note that those men who in the past served either in Hispanic ministries in the United States or Latin American ministries who had vicarage experiences in those settings are the ones who have served for many years as our missionaries in Central America, in Cuba, and in North and South America. These are the men who we provided for that kind of service, that kind of ministry. I don't have one vicar that is not under a bilingual pastor full-time, simply because of the many vacancies that we have. We could well, having all of our vacancies filled, provide for 6 Hispanic vicarage experiences a year in the Texas District. I would like to also speak now about what I would like to propose, I have proposed, and I would hope that both the seminaries as well as the synodical institutions would be open to, and that is a definite 2-year vicarage program in Hispanic ministries. My proposal is that we would assign a vicar for 2 years to a district. Specifically, I'm talking, of course, about the Texas District. Other districts may want to follow this as well. That each of those 2 years would be spent in a different setting. In between the 2 years of vicarage, during a quarter of study at some of the higher institutions of learning, we would ask them to continue studies in the Spanish language, advanced studies, and studies in acculturation. We would utilize the excellent facilities of the Hispanic Department of the University of Texas, San Antonio College, St. Mary's University, and UNAM, which is the National University of the Autonomous National University of Mexico, which has location in San Antonio, to utilize this for courses in the Spanish language and acculturation. We have now for some 10 years as a district been asking our church to consider a Hispanic seminary extension program, whereby the vicars who came up to enter the program would not return to the seminary for their final year, but would receive their final year training in a Hispanic setting. We have heard in many cases the Hispanic vicars coming back to the seminary, to both St. Louis and Fort Wayne, which by the way are not exactly the most thriving Hispanic centers in the United States, that they lose an awful lot of their ability to communicate in the language if the opportunities are not provided for them. Also, we feel that there are certain courses that are necessary to be taught, not only in the Spanish language particularly, but from the Hispanic viewpoint. I really think if we want an effective ministry to Hispanics, we need to consider such courses being taught from the Hispanic viewpoint as pastoral theology. There are certainly certain aspects of ministering to the Mexican American in his culture, in his background, in his idea of the fiesta, his idea of rites and ceremonies, which we have adapted into the Lutheran setting, which simply are not offered through a pastoral theology course in a seminary such as this or Fort Wayne. Pastoral theology, then, I think, is one of the essential courses that be taught in that kind of a setting. Hispanic history, both the history of the countries from which the Mexican and Cuban and Puerto Rican Americans come, plus also the history of the Hispanic here in our United States. I believe homiletics, a course in homiletics, needs to be taught also from the standpoint of communicating effectively to the Mexican American. And I believe that also being within that setting, being where the action is, where the language and the culture is located, is a very big plus. I personally, and many of us in Texas, have favored the location of this seminary in Austin, Texas. It was officially in 1972 when the first forms were written up and proposal of curriculum were presented to the synod and to the seminaries, was called the Hispanic Seminary Extension of the Southwest. At this point, I'd be pleased to have it any place, even Chicago, although I personally have fought against that, simply because I feel Chicago is a ghettoized situation. It is a non-typical situation. It is an artificial situation. And that is not to say that there is not exposure and need for ministry among Hispanics. But I do believe that the Southwest, specifically Texas and Southern California, offer a wider range of experience and exposure to this kind of a student. I have proposed this program to the Synodical Board for Missions, and I am also hoping that we can work through this on the seminary level with those who are assigned those responsibilities. Just mention very quickly some of the other pluses that we have going for us in Hispanic ministries. The National Hispanic Advisory Council is an extremely excellent blessing for us. Before that council existed, we were faced with a publishing house and a church body which was saying, we're sorry, but it is not feasible for us financially to reproduce a Spanish catechism or another edition of the hymnal. It is a result of that National Advisory Council working through the Synodical Office that new Spanish hymnals were provided and are available. I don't think they printed enough. We're now running short in some areas again. Spanish catechisms, once again, are being made available to us. And of course, I guess I was rather facetious in saying at the time I was glad that our publishing house is not responsible for Spanish Bibles. We might have had a scarcity there, too. But these obviously are important. The literature that is coming out and being prepared is a result of the efforts of that council. The Colloquy Center in Chicago, you've heard mentioned, and I think you have 4 students presently there enrolled. They cannot handle the English language that well, and so as a result, they're receiving their theological training through the Colloquy program in Spanish. What do I want to say to you, a student? I guess more than anything else, I want you to be sensitized toward Hispanic ministry. I said it previously this morning, and I want to say it again. I believe very sincerely that fully 50% of you in your assignments or in your second parish will probably be located in areas with a predominance of Spanish-speaking individuals. You are going to have to be equipped to sensitize your people and to mobilize, if possible, your people to go into that kind of ministry. I think now is the time to be thinking about it. Now is the time to be using the implements that are available to you. Now is the time to learn the Spanish language. Now is the time to learn something more about the culture instead of just going to Taco Bell and saying, boy, Mexican food is great. Now is the time to be doing it. It's extremely important that you have this behind your belt. Buy a Spanish Bible. When I was in seminary, I remember we had, during noontime hour, I can't remember who it was now, who was involved in deaf ministry. And I still have my book, and I don't remember the sign language because I haven't kept it up, but I had the exposure to it, and it brought a greater sensitivity. When in my last congregation, I had a girl who was deaf. And being able to at least pick up a little something and having a sort of relevant ministry to her as a result of it. I think with the largest minority in the United States, we'd best be well prepared. Buy a Spanish Bible. Buy a Spanish catechism. Get a hold of a Spanish hymnal if you can. I'm sure there are some available around campus. Sit down. Buy a Bible that has English on one side and Spanish on the other, if nothing else. And compare. Pick it up. Those of you who have had Latin, and boy, did I ever complain about having to take Latin at Bronxville. I thought that was the most useless thing in the world. Am I glad I had it now? Because there's such a kinship between the two. I was a very poor Latin student, by the way, but at least it did help me tremendously in picking up the Spanish language. Of all the languages that we have exposure to through our theological studies program, I think Spanish is probably the easiest one to pick up and to communicate in. Don't just pick it up to be able to translate it. Pick it up to be able to communicate in it. I would hope that those of you that are here today and some of your fellow students would be able to grow in your concern for this kind of ministry. I remember so succinctly my fourth year at seminary, after having come back from the vicarage in South America and very often being asked to come to the dorm devotions which we had just to share something of my experience, two fellows whom I overheard, they didn't know I was standing by, and they, after I had presented something about Venezuela and the conditions and the kind of ministry and the difficulties and so forth, I overheard them say, "Boy, you'd never get me to go into that kind of a ministry." I've never forgotten that. That really hurt. That really hurt. But there wasn't even a desire to be open to that possibility. I think we all need to be open to that possibility. Who knows what gifts God's Spirit has laid latent in your heart and in your lives, even the gift of serving in the Spanish language to Hispanics. Seminary commitment. To the seminary, I would hope once again, and I'm very thankful for this opportunity in particular, to be able to share these feelings with you, a continuous exposure at things like this, convocations like this. And I especially thank Dr. Bowman, who about 2.5 years ago made a trip with me in South Texas to visit our Hispanic ministry and discovered what uniqueness there was to that ministry, and asked me to provide any type of information or suggestion, and not only myself but my district, in order to make this a more valid ministry and preparation for ministry here at the seminary. This, I think, needs to be continued. The Spanish Club is fine. It's good. But I would hope that it would have a larger following and also a greater backing by the faculty. The mention by Dr. Schultz about credit courses in Spanish, I encourage you intensely again to provide courses for credit in the Spanish language for those whom the Lord leads to prepare for that kind of ministry. I would also hope that some of the courses that we proposed, that I proposed previously for the seminary extension or a two-year vicarage, would also be courses that eventually could receive credit, the student could receive credit for. Also, I encourage the seminary to give careful consideration to the two-year vicarage program, working together with our Synodical Mission Board. Once again, I beg of you to give serious study, and not just study, but action, on the Extension Seminary, and I'm still going to refer to it as the Extension Seminary of the Southwest. I'm hesitant to do this, but I think it perhaps will offer a flavor of how we really feel in Texas about this. In the convention proceedings in the past, we have reiterated over and over again the need and the desire for that kind of a program, a Hispanic Extension Seminary program. To the point that in a number of occasions, some of the men in our district in convention were ready to provide resolutions asking for the establishment of a separate Hispanic seminary in Texas. I pleaded with them not to do it. It means an awful lot of work, an awful lot of preparation, an awful lot of headache. We think it can be done with the existing institutions through certain means. But this past year, in convention, our Texas district once again handled this matter. To say that we are impatient is an understatement. Perhaps we need to learn patience. but we see it day by day. It surrounds us. After reiterating the resolutions in convention since 1973 regarding this matter, the Texas District has finally resolved the following. I think it's strong wording, but it's our feeling. That the Texas resolved of the Texas District in convention assembled requests the President of Synod to personally and publicly call to account all those persons, boards, institutions, or other entities to which the Church in Convention for close to a decade now has given the responsibility for initiating an Hispanic Seminary Extension program. And be it further resolved that the Synodical President call upon those responsible for implementation of the standing resolution to respond to the Church in Convention assembled in 1981 regarding their activities or lack of same to date. And be it further resolved that should the responsible parties be unable or unwilling to implement the resolution Dallas 10-03A, the Church in Convention grant the authority for implementation to a select presidentially appointed committee of persons interested in and capable of implementation. And be it finally resolved that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod affirm its commitment to the making of disciples among the Hispanics in our country and go on record as neither desirous of nor capable of providing a viable ministry to this growing population, nor the attendant specialized training for staffing said ministry. We feel extremely strong about this. The time is already too late. I don't think we'd have the vacancies we have today had this program been implemented in its earlier presentation. And I'm also calling on the seminaries to work together. What is being done at Fort Wayne Seminary and some of what is being done at Concordia Seminary St. Louis is being done on a partisan basis. And it is not an answer to the resolution of Synod. And I would like to appeal that that resolution of Synod be that which is addressed in the future. At this point, I'm going to take a break for any questions or comments you may have. I could go on to speak a little bit, maybe there'll be time, about some characteristics of Mexican-American, the attitude, thought patterns, and so forth, if time permits. But perhaps it's time now to offer a few questions, comments.